Okay, good morning, good night of Shabbos. We're continuing with Parshios, Nitzav Vayelech, this week in the Maharal. We are learning this month in the Kolel, and outside of the Kolel, Lirefua Shalema for Rafal Moshe Elimelech Ben Basha. So we continue to learn that our Talmud Torah should be a Zuchus for Rafua Shalema for him. So we have two Maharals that we want to discuss, but we need the Mirtz Hashem today. It happens to be they both start with Gur Aryeh, but really pivot to outside of Gur Aryeh, which we've done multiple times throughout our series on Maharal, but in particular this time, the Maharal asks the question in Gur Aryeh, gives answers which are important and meaningful on one level, but you know, you'll see the more fundamental answer, and in some cases the more obvious answer, honestly, appears in other Svarim, so it's worthwhile to look there, and we'll probably focus on those. The Psukim and Parshas Nitzavim in the very beginning, we'll have one from Nitzavim, one from Vayelech. The Psukim in the beginning of Parshas Nitzavim tell us, Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem Lefnei Hashem Lekechem Reshechem Shifteichem Zeknechem Zeshvetrechem Kol Yish Yisrael. Everyone's here, everyone's gathered, everyone's standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we're going to Le'avrecha B'Vris Hashem Lekecha to go and have this covenant, to recreate the covenant with the Jewish people. L'man Hakim Oscha, that you should keep the Torah and we should keep the covenant together. Says the Torah in the bold over here, Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'lo Itechem Levadchem Anochi Koreis Es HaBris HaZos Ves HaAla HaZos. It's not only with you that I am making this deal, that I'm making this covenant together. Ki es asher yeshno po imanu omed hayom lefnei Hashem Elokeinu, ve'es asher inenu po imanu hayom. I'm making this bris not only with you, but with all the people who are standing here, and with all the people who are not standing here at this present moment. Now, what does that mean, standing here and not standing here? So you could have thought, initially you could have thought, that it means here and not here, geographically, spatially, meaning there are some people who are before us, and there are some people who are sick at home, in bed, or there are some people who are in a different country, or there are some people who are on vacation in Kabul. People might be all over the globe, so the people who are here are included in the bris physically, and the people who are not here physically are not included in the bris. That could have been a simple understanding, correct? Why not, Morris? But why can't it be what we just said? Yeah. Exactly. So all the Mepharshim and Rashi, Morris is correct. Rashi says this, and they say, why did Rashi say that? Why did Rashi say what he said? So exactly like Dr. Geffel, you just said, if you go back to the first Pasuk in Parshas Nitzavim, we'll get there eventually. If you go to the first Pasuk in Parshas Nitzavim, it's Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem Lefnei Hashem Lekechem. There's no one missing. We were already told there's no one missing. So if there's no one missing, it can't be that there are some people in Cabo and there are some people here in front of us for the bris. Everyone was mamash here. So what does it mean, people who are here, people who aren't here? The Sifsei Chacham says this and the Gur Aryeh says this as well. Rashi says, look in the indented part over here, Rashi's script, V'es asher inenu po, v'af imdoros ha'asidim liyos, even the people of the future who are not yet existent, meaning those who are not yet in this world, they're only going to come into existence later on, so they too are included in this bris. Now the Gur Aryeh asks a very obvious question, and honestly a very fundamental question. It's a question that you have to come to terms with as a Jewish person, living so many years after this bris took place. Vim Tomar in the bold, in the Gur Aryeh and Ostes here. Vim Tomar, Achash Lohaya Ba'olam, these people were not in the world, they didn't exist. Eich Efshar Lichros Bris Imahem. V'halo Inam Ba'olam. What does that mean? You can't make a covenant with someone who doesn't exist. How do you make a deal with someone that's binding on them for all generations if they didn't yet exist? Very simply, you have a person who's a ger katan, so we know in certain cases there's a halacha that they can sort of decide by the time of their bar mitzvah, not in every case. There are certain cases where a person can decide by their bar mitzvah, they're in or they're out. Or just a ger in general, a person who decides to become Jewish, he decides to become Jewish. Why? Because he wasn't part of the Jewish people initially. Again, there are alpisod, the Meshech Chachma quotes this alpisod, we assume that gerim have a nikud in their neshama, there's a spark inside of them that they were always going to be Jewish. I mean, there was always like a little bit of a Yiddish neshama inside of a ger, inside of a gyores, and that just came to the fore when they converted. But very technically speaking, they were not part of the tribe, and then they became part of the tribe. They make a choice to do so, because they weren't there in the beginning. They weren't part of that lineage in the beginning. We are genetically Jewish, we have that lineage, but we didn't accept the bris. I didn't say yes. I didn't say Nasa Vinish Menar Sinai, so how come I don't get a choice now? Why is that bris, why is that covenant binding on me so many generations later if I wasn't there for the bris itself? So the Gur Aryeh here, the Maharal in the commentary in Rashi, so he gives a teretz, he gives an answer. It's a good answer, it's technical, and it has a weak point, which we're not going to get into now, but he basically explains how that bris wasn't just a covenant, it was actually a takana, it was an enactment of Moshe Rabbeinu, that the bris was accepted on behalf of the Jewish people, and it was enacted by the people of that generation, and therefore that enactment, that takana, is binding for all generations. Again, it has a flaw in it, and we're not going to spend too much time in it, but that's what the Maharal says over here in Gur Aryeh. However, I think this is, it's almost more obvious, but the fact that it's obvious and the fact that it's simple doesn't make it simplistic. It doesn't make it, it's basic, it's foundational, but it's not low level. It's very deep and very important and very, very, very foundational. Is the Maharal in Sefer Netzach Yisrael in the 11th parak. You have it in the next source. Again, source number one, it's like the third paragraph over here, the Netzach Yisrael, written by the Maharal. Netzach Yisrael is the Sefer written all about the Agarata, about the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. It's a Tisha B'Av type of Sefer, Bein HaMitzarim type of Sefer. So here he talks about this exact question. It said, he quotes the Pasuk in Nitzavim, V'lo etchem levadchem anelchi koreses habris hazos, etc. Rather, with everyone for all generations. And he says, U'me'ata, in the second line, Eich efsher sheyichros brisim, asher lo nodo adayim, inam ba'olam, they don't exist. How could you make a bris with them? Aval davar barer, it's very clear, says the Maharal, L'fisha karas bris im Avram mitzachu aschalas ha'ume bechlau, V'chein b'Yisrael, that's our psukim, the whole Jewish people who omer, she'in koris bris imahim mitzad she'im pratim. The bris, the covenant that Hashem made with the Jewish people, wasn't with the Jewish persons. It wasn't with each Jew. Each Jew accepted upon himself, I'm part of this bris, I'm part of the Jewish people, I'm part of this covenant to keep the Torah, I swear to keep the Torah. It wasn't a bris with each individual, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, etc. Elarak mitzad ha'uma, the Hainu Shem Yisrael. Says the Maharal, there was a covenant with the Jewish people as a people, as a unit, as one nation. V'davar zeh kolo sam shehim ata lefanav. That includes all the Jews of that generation. V'chein osam shenoldu acharkach. And also the Jews of subsequent generations. Shekulam shem uma Yisraelis aleihem. Because everyone's part of the Jewish people. We see each other as yechidim. We see each other as pieces, but we're all pieces of one whole. The Meshech Chachma, we're going to see its reference soon on the page, but the Meshech Chachma in multiple places, only one place is referenced on the page in the Haftarah and Parshas Dvarim, but I wrote an article about this a few years ago. I must have collected, I just don't remember now if I did, but I must have collected a few of the other places. The Meshech Chachma says this in a few different areas in his commentary, that the way the Jewish people are supposed to be envisioned is not as separate individuals, but as pieces of one whole, as actually parts of a body. So one Jew is the arm, one Jew is the leg, one Jew is the finger, one Jew is the fingernail. Everyone composes one unit. So on one level, you can look at each other as chalakim, as pieces, but really we combine into one complete unit. Says the Maharal, that's true not only of the Jews of every generation, it's not just we have legs and arms and fingers and noses in every generation. Over the course of Jewish history, past and present, we have a collective unit. You want to just pass one source, you back to Meir? We have a collective unit, a collective composite entity, one guf, one body of the Jewish people that spreads over the entirety of time, over the entirety of history. So when Hashem makes a bris, makes a covenant with the Jewish people, he's not making a bris with the Jewish persons that are in front of him. He's not making a bris with the Jewish persons that exist for all eternity. He's actually making a bris with the entirety of the Jewish people as a unit that can carry over to all the Jewish people of the future. You're born into the unit. It's this body of the Jewish people was there at Har Sinai, was there at Atem Nitzav Mayom Kulchem, was there for the bris, and therefore the bris was chal, the bris had teeth for all generations subsequently as well. If you look in the next source, the last Hebrew source on the page, Pachad Yitzchak, in Pesach, he says this also in Purim in different words, but you see, Klalius Knesset Yisrael, everything in the Pachad Yitzchak, he was such an original thinker, Rav Huttner, and he was such a poetic writer, and he was such such a creative way of putting things together, but everything's from the Maharal. Everything he writes about is sourced in the Maharal. So everything you see that's yisod, that's foundational, as opposed to a chiddush, as opposed to something which is an application, he had it from the Maharal. So here, this is obviously from the Maharal. Klalius Knesset Yisrael, Ein Muvana Kovetz Kol HaPratim. The idea of the Klal Yisrael, the Jewish unit, is not that there are a lot of pieces that you tape together, that you glue together. It's not that we're a lot of pieces, that when you collect them, you have an entirety of Jewish people. You do a count, and it's a lot of people. No, that's not the pshat. It's not Ishim Yechidim Shel B'nai Yisrael. Klal Yis Knesset Yisrael, he Yechida Achas. It's one unit. It's one entity. Asher HaIshim HaYechidim Him Chalakim Mimena. We're each a part of it. We each have a role in it, but it's one unit of the Jewish people. And again, the same Yisod in so many different words and in so many different places, but here I just want to show you that this comes from Rav Soloveitchik very deeply from him and from two of his students. But if you look in the second to last source, Rav Twersky, my Rebbe, in his article called As One Person with One Heart, he references that Rav Soloveitchik often explained that Judaism conceives of the Jewish nation as well as any microcosmic Jewish community, meaning not just the Jewish nation as a whole, but Kihilas Adas Torah, and any shul or any group of people that come together in a real significant way, not simply as a large aggregate or massive partnership of individuals. It's not a lot of people chipping in. It's not a lot of people getting together and pooling resources, no, but rather as a distinct metaphysical entity. It exists in and of itself. It's its own unit. It's its own whole. And that's what the Maharal is saying in Netzach Yisrael. That accounts for, we'll see soon there are two halachic points also, but that accounts for the idea that you can have a bris in way, way back in history, in whatever year it was, Atem Nitzavim, and that bris applies to us today. Not because we're taking on ourselves again. We can't reject the bris because we're born into the same unit. We were part of that Jewish people at the time of the bris as well. All of Jewish people subsequently and previously combined to this one unit of Judaism, of this metaphysical entity of the Jewish people that spans generations and spans all places geographically as well. Very bottom of the page, this article that Rav Twersky was referencing, The Community by Rav Soloveitchik, is a very worthwhile read in general, by the way. But there's one footnote in there where he specifically focuses on this. There's a din in the halacha that when you have a chatas shemesu ba'aleha, you have a carbon chatas that's separated to be offered as a carbon chatas, and the bailim, the owner of the carbon, passes away. He dies. He predeceases offering the carbon. So what happens to that chatas? So this is one of the chatos hamesos, meaning it's there's different opinions as to how exactly we do it, but basically we allow it to become either disqualified and then killed, or we kill it actively, whatever the case might be, but we let this chatas die. We let this chatas go to be disposed of because the bailim, the people who own it, who are supposed to offer it, don't exist anymore. So the Gemara in Tumur has a fascinating concept at the bottom of the page that there's a principle of ein tzibor mesim. If you have a chatas hatzibor, if you have a chatas that's supposed to be on behalf of the entire Jewish community, ein tzibor mesim, there's no such thing as an entire community dying. So I don't understand. Of course there's a concept of entire community dying. It may never have happened like historically, but you know, Rahman al-Tzlan, think of the entirety of Telz was wiped out in the Holocaust. The Germans wiped out an entire town. They killed everyone who lived in the town. On a global scale, you could think of it, you could imagine a case in which the entire Jewish people ceased to exist. Not obviously, we have a promise it won't happen, but physically speaking, you could imagine a tzibor dying. Or we just talk historically. The tzibor of the Yotzei Mitzrayim completely died in the Midbar over the course of 40 years, correct? We didn't have any of them left in that generation. We certainly don't have them left now. So there is a concept of a tzibor dying, no? A tzibor could die. So the Rav says, yeah, but that's not what the tzibor means. Tzibor means the Jewish people. The Jewish people ain't tzibor mesim. It's rooted in the concept I'm reading inside. We have indicated, namely, that the existence of the community as, again, a metaphysical unity surpasses the physical existence of its individual members. Yes, the individuals of the Dor HaMidbar are deceased. Yes, the people in Telz were wiped out, Rahman al-Atslan, but the Jewish people still exist. The metaphysical entity that makes up the Jewish people, that body of Judaism, still exists and will exist for all time and did exist for all time. That can never be wiped out, and that's the source of the halacha and tmura of Ein Tzibor Mesim. If you flip the page, my Rabbi Rav Shechter has in his Sefer Nefesh HaRav, in the early on, page 50, but it goes from page 49 or 48 already and goes forward, but he has this concept as well, which he describes quoting the Rav as well, and he quotes a different halacha. The Pasuk says in the Parsha Shoftim, in the Parsha of Egla Rufa, that the Egla Rufa should be Kaper La'amcha Yisrael Asher Pedisa Hashem. It should be a kapara, it should be an atonement for the Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, Asher Pedisa Hashem, that you redeemed. What Jewish people were redeemed? So the Gemara in Bodhisattva says, sorry, the Gemara in Horios, just so the Ayin Zayin, Al-Zeh, the Gemara in Horios and Daf Vav says that this term, Dasher Pedisa Hashem, that Hashem, you redeemed this Jewish people, is referring to the Yotzei Mitzrayim. So I don't understand. The Egla Rufa was being offered, or could have been offered, or could have been shechted many years after the Yotzei Mitzrayim. So what are you talking about? That the kapara of the Egla Rufa, the atonement of the Egla Rufa, is going back on the Yotzei Mitzrayim, the people left Mitzrayim? That makes sense? So Rav Shechter quotes from Soloveitchik, yeah, that does make sense. Why? Because you have a concept of kaparas hayachid, that there's an individual who comes before Hashem anytime during the year, specifically on Yom Kippur, and beseeches him for a kapara, does tshuva and tries to gain atonement. There's also a concept of kaparas hatzibor, that the entire community is trying to atone for their averos, and that concept of kaparas hatzibor goes well beyond the bounds of whoever exists in our current day, whoever's contemporary with you. That concept of the atonement, the kaparas atzibur, goes backwards and forwards in history as well. So yes, the egel arufo, no matter what point in history, can be an atonement also for the yotzei Mitzrayim. If you read in the words in Hebrew, tekla Yisrael hu musag metafizi bifnei atzmo. It's a metaphysical entity. It doesn't exist in the realm of bodies. It exists as one metaphysical entity, one body of the Jewish people. And that also accounts for what the Ramban made famous in his commentary on the Torah, which Rav Shechter references in four words over here, karban shutvim and karban tzibur. There's a difference between a partnership where two people come together and decide to chip in for a karban, and when the tzibur has a karban as a unit. A partnership is many individuals. A tzibur, there's a difference in terms also, like LLCs versus something else. What's an LP and what's an LLC? What's the difference? One of them is a unit as an individual. It's like... Right. 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 So there's... Right. Correct. The partners in a law firm versus a company. Yeah, but there's a difference between one type of company and another type of company. I just can't remember which one it is. Maybe it's LLC and LP. I don't remember. But either way, one of them becomes there's a person. The person is the company. What do you mean? There's a million individuals. There's partners. There's owners. There's stockholders. Yeah, but they become one unit. Then another one is a partnership of people that chip in to be involved in something. Those are different concepts. That's what we're drawing on as well here. So this is all. The Maharal has this as well. Rav Soloveitchik definitely, to quote my Rebbe Rav Tursky, he learned everything. So there's no reason to believe that he didn't learn Maharal. But I've heard from multiple sources that are very legitimate and very reliable that not once did anyone ever hear him quote a Maharal. So that doesn't necessarily say anything about his opinion about the Maharal. It's a suffix as to why he didn't. I mean, we have to try to figure it out. But I don't know the answer. My Rebbeim don't know the answer why he didn't. But we have no particular reason to believe he had anything against the Maharal. But my point is that it's not like the Rav was quoting this from the Maharal, but they were mechavin to the same point. The Pachad Yitzchak, Rav Huttner, was certainly taken from the Maharal when he said this idea. The Rav came to it himself. The Rav came to this idea himself, that the Jewish people are a whole unit, a metaphysical entity that is beyond the realm of time and space, and therefore you could have our Pasuk and our Parsha saying there's a bris with the Jews for all eternity. Source number two, on the second page, we have the Pasuk in Parshas Vayelech, the second Parsha that we're reading, Vayelech Moshe Vayedaber Esadvar Ma'ela El Kol Yisrael. It's hard to not sing this to the tune of Mordechai Shapiro, but Vayomar Lehem Ben Me'ev Esrim Shana Anochi Ayom Lo Uchal Od Latzeis V'Lavo V'Hashem Amar Eli. It's really hard not to do with the beat and the tune. I don't know if anyone else is feeling that way right now. Amar Eli Lo Savor Seyardin Hazeh. So I am 120 years old. I am, done with my life, basically, and I'm lo uchal od latzeis v'lavo. I can't go back and forth anymore. I can't talk and learning, whatever the case might be. I can't cross the Yarden to go into Eretz Yisrael. Anochi hayom, says Rashi, hayom ma'u yamai ushnosai. On this day, my years and my days have been filled, meaning my life is complete. B'yom ze nolarti u'b'yom ze amos. So says the Maharal, that's a very beautiful idea, that Moshe Rabbeinu was born on Zayin Adar, he died on Zayin Adar, and therefore his years were complete. But it's not true, says the Maharal. It's not true. Why is it not true? Because we know Rashi and Parshas Pinchas told us that had Moshe not sinned by the Chet, the Meha Mariva, what would have happened? He would have gone into Eretz Yisrael, which means he would have lived more than just today. He would have lived a longer life. And because he didn't listen, or whatever, whatever the Avera might have been, because he reacted the way that he reacted, or acted the way that he acted, so he was not able to live out the entirety of his potential. He was not able to go into Eretz Yisrael, and he died at the age of 120. Exactly. So what do you mean? His life wasn't complete. He died young, so to speak. So the Maharal says, isn't that a problem? How is Rashi over here saying he had full years? It's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. And how is Rashi over there saying he didn't have a full life? He didn't live out his entire life. He didn't live out his whole potential. So the Maharal says here in the second line, V'yesh Lomar, Shlo higiyaz manam liftor, delefi godal zechus shalam hayroi lehem chayim yoser. He had so much merit that he should have lived for much, much longer. Ach b'shvil chet hamariva lo nasa lehem chayim yoser. Hashem didn't give him the extra life. Ach hayu shleimim. But it was a full life. You don't even need to explain that so well. You already understand it. But the point is that a person can live a full life without living a long life. It's very possible for a person to live, even if they don't live out their potential, to live a full life, meaning to live a life that's full, that's whole, that's chashev, that's significant, and yet not live out the length of a lengthy life. That's very possible. We'll come back to that. Achayu shleimim. Ve'od, ki hayom al yamav, shem haya meis kodem lachin, Hayalacha kitzer yamim. So this is just an interesting an answer that's a little more technical. He says the Rashi uses the words malei, that there was a full life. What does it mean that it was a full life? Meaning a person could live three ways. They could live a short life, they could live a long life, or they can live they could hit the nose on the head. They could live exactly the amount of time that's a full life. So Rashi is telling us that, yeah, Moshe Rabbeinu had enough merit to live Arichas Yom Mishanim. He could have lived, like the Yimei Mesu Shelach. I don't know how long he could have lived. He could have lived a long time. Elamai, he lost the zchus by sinning at Chet Mei Meriva, that he didn't live that long life, but he still lived exactly a full life. He didn't live a short life. He wasn't cut down early. 120 years was a full life for him. That's the technical answer the Maharal gives. Now, the first answer that you could have a short life that's still full, that's still shalim. So if you look in the Or Chadash, the last source on the page, page number 2, Or Chadash is the Sefer of the Maharal that is written on the order of the Megillas Esther. It's about Purim, it's about Megillas Esther. So Gur Arya is the Maharal's commentary on Chumash, on Rashi, really. So in Or Chadash, in the very bottom of the page, number 2, so he's commenting on the psukim which tell us that Haman did a Goral, and it came out in Adar that he should destroy the Jewish people, and he was very happy. Why was he happy? What did he realize happened in Adar? Moshe Rabbeinu died. And what does the Gemara say? He realized Moshe Rabbeinu died, but he didn't realize that Moshe Rabbeinu was also born. Same day, Zayin Adar, he died, and he was born. So what's going on in this Gemara? So first of all, just to clarify what the question is, Rashi deals with this question on the page already, but so what that Moshe was born in that month also? Meaning, we understand Moshe was born and he died in that month, but he also died in that month. Haman saw that he died in that month. That means that the Jewish people have a certain like level of death in the month of Adar. So that should have been enough to say, okay, so we'll have Purim. We'll have not Purim. We'll have Shemad. We'll kill the Jewish people and destroy them. We'll be mashkas the Jewish people, because that's when Moshe Rabbeinu died. Okay, he was also born, but he also died. What's the answer? What's the Gemara answering? So Rashi says, birth is enough to be mechaper on the death, meaning the birth overwhelmed the death. That's Rashi's answer. But the Maharal has a different answer entirely. This is so gorgeous, so beautiful. He says that if you think about it, if a person is born at a certain point and dies at a certain point, those are two disconnected points. They start on, you start on Zayin Adar, and you end on Ches Adar. So you had a birthday and you had a Yahrzeit. They're two different dates. What happens when someone like Moshe Rabbeinu, a tzaddik gomer, is born on one day and dies on another day? It's not the end of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's just closing the circuit. It's just coming back full circle to where he started. Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu was born on Zayin Adar and died on Zayin Adar. So Haman saw the death and he saw, oh, death for the Jewish people. Death means end. Meaning the same way Moshe Rabbeinu ended on Zayin Adar, or let's say in the month of Adar, so too I will end the Jewish people in Adar. This exactly the same point. I'll destroy the Jewish people the same way Moshe Rabbeinu died. The answer is Moshe Rabbeinu didn't die on Zayin Adar. His life came to a full circle on Zayin Adar because he was also born on Zayin Adar. His birthday was the same day as his patira, as his yahrzeit. And so Moshe Rabbeinu was mimale yamav. His life was full and complete, meaning it never ended. There was no start and end. There were no two distinct points in Moshe Rabbeinu's life. He lived a life complete and whole, where it started through Hashem and al yedei avodas Hashem, and it ended in that very same avodas Hashem. There was no break between the start and the finish. Moshe Rabbeinu had a full life, a life that was shalim, a life that was malay, because there were no breaking points. He was full circle. He came back to the starting point at the end of his life. Like people like to say, this is not the end, this is just the beginning. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu's beginning and his end are tied up one in the other. So says Haman, this is the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. We could end the Jewish people. But say Chazal, no, you missed the point. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't end on Zayin Adar. He started and completed on Zayin Adar. He was Malay on Zayin Adar. And that's what our Pasuk is saying. And the Maharal, if you read this long paragraph, we don't have time now, but the Maharal has so many hints, so many Ramazim to this, the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu's Gematria and the idea of 120 being a derivative of 12, and 12 is the 12 months of the year, something that's complete, something that's whole, and a circle like the globe has 12, you know, time zones or whatever, right? Meaning 12 chalakim, not time zone, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, 12 of those, right? Going up and down. So like there's 12 chalakim to a whole circle. So many things that are meramis that hint to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu lived this complete life. That's what the Chazal are trying to get across to us here, that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't die and end, but rather he came to completion. That's what Rashi's saying. That's what the Gur Arya asked the question, but this is the answer. Rashi's saying, Hayom malu yamai ushnosai. So it's true, he could have lived to 121. He could have lived to 130. He could have lived to 200. But when he lived to 120, he lived from exactly the starting point back to that same starting point. He completed his life on that day. It was yamim mileim ushleimim, even though it wasn't the arichas yamim that one would have hoped that a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu could have had. So we should all go forward and try to live lives that are full. We should also have a bracha, and we say there's bracha ksiva chesima tova before Rosh Hashanah, that we should have yamim tovim va'arukim, ushleimim. It shouldn't only be full, it should also be long, but no matter how long it is, we should live days and years of our life that are shalim, the same way as Moshe Rabbeinu, that our lives should be completely devoted to good things always. Everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.